Podcast. Of course, I am your host, Clay, and today Mark is not able to join us. I know he likes to dip out a lot. I don't know why. Maybe he's just like, I'm just going to throw Clay under the bus and hope that he, you know, figures everything out. But we actually have a first-time guest here on the podcast, a partner with Comic Book Legion. If you visited the website within the last 2 months, he has started to post. He's pretty big on YouTube. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. Juice Wayne from Juice from the Box. He talks everything there is on Batman. He had a long running series on Gotham reviews.
I try to forget that.
And on top of a whole bunch of other stuff recently. But Juice, how have you been?
I've been good, man. I've been good. I'm glad to be first time on the podcast, you know, to cover for Mark, you know, since he's out. I've been good. It's been cool to join up with you guys and do some stuff for the website and bring in some new viewers to the channel and hopefully for you guys as well. I'm excited to talk comics. This is the first comic book podcast I've been on. I've been on a few podcasts, but they've never been comic book related, so this should be interesting.
Yeah, and we are actually a little bit Batman heavy this week, so it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I'm all about Batman.
Yeah, man, especially this first book we're going to be talking about. It was a doozy. Yeah. I've loved this series. It's a love-hate relationship just because, you know, it has been delayed for so long, this last issue.
Yeah.
And it had its delays for, you know, some speculation of, you know, being censored and not letting the creators really do what they were wanting to do to begin with on this book.
Yeah.
But it is Batman Damned number 3 is what we're going to be talking about tonight. Juice. You know, high-level thoughts. What did you think about this book when you first read it?
So, I mean, one, obviously, the art is always amazing. Like, it's just always, always amazing. We see Azzarello, and is it Bermoge? I don't know how to say the last name.
Bermejo.
Okay, they're together, they're always amazing, in my opinion. I love them on, I believe, was it Joker and Noel? I don't know if Azzarello wrote Noel. I don't think he did.
I don't know if Noel was Azzarello, but that's the first time I've seen this art was Noel.
Yeah. So I know the art is all similar across all of those because it's a very distinct style. And I've always loved it. It's always been a unique Batman, like outfit and everything. So I've always enjoyed that. But so I will say that the gap did kind of throw me off a little bit because I kind of forgot some stuff that happened in the previous two issues. We all know what happened on the very first issue, which was the big talking point, which could have what the rumor is changed the second issue and is the reason why this issue was delayed. And so I was reading it. I was like, I gotta kind of need a refresher on what's happening because there is a joke in here. And I don't know if we're cool with spoilers on this podcast, I'm assuming, if you're listening.
Yeah, this is a spoiler-filled podcast just because we like to talk all the interiors, all the juicy stuff. What was the part that you were talking about? Because it completely slipped my mind when I read it, too.
Yeah, so there is this, like, so there's all this epic scene in here where it starts off very early in the issue where Swamp Thing shows up, and he basically saves Batman, and they're having this conversation. And, of course, Constantine shows up. We know he's been, like, a consistent character in this run. And I have the scene pulled up right here. And Batman's just kind of, you know, he's kind of pissed that Constantine's there. And he's, like, wearing a mask, so it looks like he's kind of joking at him. And then this is what Constantine says. He says, "Come on, even after I snatched the belt from Miss Quinn, took from your waist before she, well." And then it kind of cuts to another thing where he's pulling out cigarettes. And he's like, "Fancy a cigarette." Basically hinting at that Batman and Harley Quinn hooked up. Which is something I completely forgot about in the previous book. And the rumors were that that was supposed to be an even more intense scene. And there was possibly going to be like some hooking up between Batman and Harley Quinn in the second issue. And the rumors have said that it got rewritten or whatever, redrawn. So that was pretty interesting. But I thought that was pretty funny just to, you know, it's very typical in movies and stuff to like after sex or whatever, you have a cigarette And, like, yeah. you know, Constantine always has them. So I thought that was pretty funny. I thought that was cool. But, yeah, just having Swamp Thing there, especially with the show going on right now, I was like, oh, shit, Swamp Thing. So, yeah, man, this issue started off with a bang, and I was loving every second of it. There was, like, I don't know how you felt about this, but when you saw the statues, did your mind not go straight to Doctor Who?
I did.
Yes.
I was going to talk to you about that. If I know I've mentioned it before, if anybody doesn't remember. But me and Juice actually worked together, and I was going to mention it, mm-hmm. but I was like, you know what? Let me wait until we actually record, because yeah. I totally got that vibe
100%.
When I was reading this book.
Yeah.
So the Weeping Angels always terrified me on Doctor mm-hmm. Who. Really cool that they were brought up here, and you know, I've always thought the aspect of Enchantress as you know, kind of the villain slash story progressor really in yeah. this entire thing was a very interesting aspect. You know, with everything that they could have gone to.
Yeah.
This of course was very supernatural heavy. That's why, you know, you have somebody like Constantine. And it definitely helped that you had Swamp Thing in this issue and you know, some other characters that come along, such as oh my god, I almost forgot her name.
Zatanna?
Zatanna, yeah, yeah. Zatanna.
Yeah. I never forget Zatanna's name. Especially the way she's drawn in this comic. She's gorgeous.
Oh my gosh, so gorgeous.
Yeah.
I actually got tripped up on her spells because I almost forgot that, oh man, yeah, she has to do everything backwards.
Yeah, for sure.
We see another appearance by Deadman, which, with this realistic art style, Deadman looks super, like, super creepy.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, that's when Zatanna shows Bruce basically his childhood and what that, you know, that brings us to basically the last scenes of this book and where it needs to be going. And it seems that Enchantress is really showing Bruce the where, you know, this nightmare all started.
Yeah.
And it went in a weird direction.
Yeah.
Especially with, you know, Martha and Thomas Wayne. You know, you would expect it be, you know, just the same old, you know, couple shots from the gun and whatever. But they look bludgeoned. They look super bloody. I don't know if it's just because of this art style, but it looked really intense.
Yeah. One, Enchantress' face creeps me the hell out. In this comic, where it's like, there's a movie that it reminds me of. It's not like The Purge, I'm not too sure, but there's a horror movie that has a very similar mask or something along to the way Enchantress looks, but it's just the way her eyes and her mouth connect. It looks super creepy. And this yeah. is, you know, in the same genre. Also, I don't know if this sounds weird to say it, but the Waynes look awesome in this art. Like, I know they're dead, and that's the only time we ever really see the Waynes, but they look amazing in this art style. And so I thought that was pretty cool. But yeah, so like you were saying, it does kind of take a different turn. And also, does Constantine kill Enchantress with a bullet? Like, does she literally just die because of that?
It really looks so. And, you know, I thought there would be some, like, I guess, explanation as of why that worked.
Yeah,
you know, maybe it was like a hidden bullet that Constantine always keeps in his pockets or something.
Yeah,
you know, something you know, something supernatural about it
for sure.
But you know, he just shoots her point blank 3 times, and one of the bullets actually gets younger Bruce that we see here.
Yeah.
And you know, Batman's like, that you just shot me. You killed me. But yeah, what's going on? He's like, well, that's the past. Don't worry about it, you know?
Yeah.
Which, this next part is where I was surprised. And I know, you know, we talked about it before at work.
Yeah.
That this didn't really hit you as hard because you didn't know the character.
No,
but
did not.
We see the Spectre, and not the way that majority of people know him.
That's exactly why I didn't know. I knew who he is. I don't know a lot about the character, but I know his look. It's so distinct. This, I was just like, who's this random guy in a trench coat?
Yeah, so the really only way you would know that this is Spectre is just by the way he talks. This one line that says, Batman, you fought hell for your soul, and now you stand before me in judgment.
Yeah.
That automatically got me to think that it was Spectre. Spectre is the embodiment of vengeance on Earth. Okay. I don't know his exact origin, but he is basically the... I'm not really sure... But the greatest thing is that, you know, because he's vengeance, he always works really well alongside Batman.
Yeah.
Just
sure.
in, like, the stories and, you know, that's the whole thing with Batman. You know, he, the whole Batman the Animated thing, I am vengeance, I am the night. So I always thought these two characters were always good together whenever they were in a story together. But it goes back all the way to the very first part of this book that we didn't get to see.
Yeah.
Which was the Batman and Joker fight.
Yeah.
And we find out that there was a decision that was made that caused everything. It was the fact that Joker himself, like, was there on the ledge. He had stabbed Bruce. And just like any other day, Batman, you know, offered his help to save the day, which he does with any and all criminals.
Yeah, doesn't matter who it is.
But then he had a second thought. Yeah. What if I'm not around to save him? Or what if I'm not around to stop him one day? And what if he's not here one day? You know,
yeah.
Just kind of both thoughts. And he decided not to save him.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why he died at the beginning of this whole series. Which was crazy to think about. But when Spectre and Bruce, you know, look at this body, who is presumably the Joker, because they never really show him.
Yeah.
But Batman says...
Name unknown.
Yeah. He says, I wish he were still alive. And, like, his essence, his body, everything gets, you know, just slammed right into this... I don't even
like
know what those things are called.
Casket. Yeah, I forget what they're called.
The little doors inside the morgue where the bodies go, and it jumps us right back to the beginning of the story.
Yep.
Like, literally the beginning of the story where Joker falls into the water, but the only difference is he gets out,
he
starts laughing, and you see the Joker alive and well.
The very killing, the classic killing joke pose is too, if you didn't catch that.
Oh, yeah. I caught that, and I love the last page. It's the flat line that is interrupted by the ha-has.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool. So, Juice, overall, with all three issues, the controversies aside, just the story, what'd you think?
I enjoyed it. Because, like, so I know you and I have had this discussion a million times. I, being someone who just covers Batman, loves Batman, he's my favorite character, I've read a bunch of different Batman stories. And, of course, you always want him to stick to his core, and you want him to be, you know, not killing, you want him to honor justice, all of that jazz. But I would be a liar if I said I didn't like different iterations, and even kind of towing that line of him kind of maybe changing his morals. I've never really been on the, like, oh, Batman should totally kill kind of bus. Like, I'm not that guy. I love Batman because he doesn't kill. I think it's too easy to kill people. You know what I mean? I think everybody's had that when you're in road rage. You're just like, oh, I want to kill that person. Like, you know, it's just way too easy. And I think that's what I've always found so compelling about Batman, is he, no matter what happens, he does not kill people. But to see this story... And just read that, like, he just did the very most human thing you can do and second-guess something. And it's made him regret it. Like, he regretted that his worst enemy died because he had a second thought. I thought that was amazing. I just wanted to touch on that ending of this. And then, of course, you know, like I said, with Spectre, makes everything go back and Joker lives. But overall, this story, I really enjoyed it. One, the art, phenomenal. Like, just some of the best art for Batman ever. And the story, I really enjoyed it because I don't read too many, like, supernatural Batman stories, because sometimes I think they get a little too crazy. And, like, it's just like, okay, it's Batman with all this magic stuff. And it doesn't really, sometimes it doesn't work. A lot of people don't write it very well. But here, I thought with the art, with everything going on in it, and just Batman kind of chasing this regret, I thought it worked really well. Because the only people that are going to bring back people from life, you know, are magic people, unless you're, you know, Ra's al Ghul and you're going to do some Lazarus Pit shit. But I thought this was a really solid story. The delays, I will say, hurt it. Because I, like I said, it was so long from issue 3 that I was kind of just like, yeah, I forgot what happened. Like, I mentioned this to you. When I was reading this, I low-key thought, like, the way it ended, I was like, did Batman just turn into Joker? Is this, like, an infinite loop of, like, he makes a bad decision so he becomes the bad, like, the bad person? But then you explained it. I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, man, I really need to read issue 1 and 2 again because I'm totally off on this. Although I did read this issue kind of quick, so I didn't get to really, I was like, oh, I gotta read this real quick. So I didn't get to really savor this. But I actually enjoyed the story a lot. I will say that I wish we would have got the original stuff. It sucks that Bat Dick ruined that. Not ruined, but it, everybody concentrated on that opposed to the actual story, which I do believe hurt it because I thought the first issue was pretty solid. But of course, that's what everybody focused on. And yeah. then, of course, whatever rumored changes had to be changed from this. Were we going to get a more adult story? And, like, I'm not somebody opposed to that. Like, when I read the issue, I was like, oh, Bat Dick. I laughed and I read the story. But other people, mm-hmm. I can see how they focus on that. And I guess that's why DC was like, no, we can't have nudity or we can't do whatever in these next issues. You got to redraw them. I'm hoping we can see those panels someday because I would love to see the full story. But you know, from what we got, I thought it was awesome. Delays kind of sucked, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was a pretty solid Batman story.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. And Mark brought up a good question, especially when you bring it up with, you know, the confusion of the ending. Mm-hmm. You know, Mark recently, texted us in the Slack chat, which we really need to get you on, by the way.
Yeah.
He said, you know, does this ending feel like it connects with the Liebermejo and Azzarello Joker book that came out around 2009, 2010? Yeah. And, you know, thinking about it, it does look like it connects. But the crazy thing is this a sequel mm-hmm. to the Joker or is this the prequel to the Joker? Like, it could... It feels and looks like it could basically go both ways.
Yeah.
So I'd be really interested to see if there's a definite answer to that for sure.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I mean, I have the book right on my shelf over there, but I mean, I remember it pretty well to where it starts off with Joker getting out of the asylum, and it's more of a, not a Joker story, but a, like, what do they call him? Like, you know, a goon story. And yeah. The Joker, that story has... That story was the one story that showed me how fucked up Joker could be. Whereas he... I mean, you've read it, right? Have you read it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that scene where they have that fight in the alley with Two-Face. And he gets so mad that he was like, oh, so you have a wife? Because that guy never told him about a wife. And then he ends up... You turn the page and he fucked the dude's wife. Like, it's like, what? Like, I never thought that. Like, every time somebody freaked out with the Killing Joke stuff or like, oh, yeah, Barbara Gordon got, like, sexually assaulted. Every time I read that, I never really thought that. Like, everybody's like, she got raped. And I was like, I don't know. I think Joker's just kind of fucked up. I don't know if he did that. But then I read Joker and I was like, oh, man, he probably could have totally done that. And so, like, now I'm just like, it blows my mind. Like, Joker, that story totally changed my thoughts on how crazy Joker could be.
For sure, for sure.
But yeah, I don't know if it connects, man. I'd have to read it again, and yeah, it could definitely be a prequel or a sequel for sure.
Yeah, you know, the last time I read that book was literally right after I watched The Dark Knight.
Okay, nice.
So, I know from, you know, working at a comic book shop recently, and talking to the people who had been in a comic book shop at the time of, you know, The Dark Knight coming out, apparently. This was the closest Joker reiteration to the Heath Ledger Joker.
Yeah.
And so that was a book that was highly recommended. Mm-hmm. It apparently pushed sales, like, through the roof for that year.
Nice.
So it'd be interesting. It would be interesting to really go back and read that again. I need to buy it, actually.
Yeah.
I need to get that on my shelf.
You can usually find them at half price. For people that don't know, that's a local bookshop here where we live. But I've seen a bunch of them there before. Yeah.
It's been like a couple of months since I've gone to Half Price. I need to go back.
Yeah. It's a solid get, man. I love that book.
But, dude, talking about that special character in Damn, mm-hmm. the Spectre, we actually got a second appearance of him this week.
Yep.
With Batman Detective 1006. This variant cover, like, I have stopped collecting Detective.
Yeah.
Because I'm only doing certain books. Mm-hmm. Since I've tried to, you know, lower my budget on comics. I kind of want to get that cover this week.
That cover is pretty legit. I will definitely say that. But sometimes, like, I actually love the DC logo with the numbers sometimes, though. You know? Like, variant covers are pretty cool. But, like, sometimes I want the variant cover, but with the number on it and the DC logo and stuff like that. Like, come on, give me a little bit of both. But, yeah, no, that cover is pretty legit. Sometimes the Detective cover's been kind of hit or miss. Like, I hated those blueprint ones. The blueprint ones were terrible. They have been hit
or miss. I had a love-hate relationship with some of those. Mm-hmm. The ones that I did not like, and I've told you this before, whenever they make the cover, like, you have to turn the book sideways.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that I do not like.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, those are pretty
bad. This is Detective Comics 1006, There Will Be Blood, written by Peter Tomasi. Art is by Kyle Hotz, and the colorist is David Aaron. This book caught me by surprise. For one, I was surprised at the different art for this week.
Mm-hmm.
That caught me off guard. And just for the fact that we, you know, got the Spectre twice this week.
Yeah.
This is basically a murder mystery issue. A really short read, to be completely honest. It took me, you know, very quick to finish this.
Yeah, it's like four pages of him running across rooftops. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Looked great, though.
Yeah, so there's this cult that is dressed just like the Spectre, and I feel like they know exactly who that is, because they go to this man's, this detective. I forgot his name already. He is, let's see if I got it.
The one that died, or?
No, the redhead.
Corrigan or something like that?
Corrigan, yeah. So he is the host of the Spectre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why he, you know, jumps out of his chest or whatever. And they are like, oh, yeah, here's the Spectre. You know, kill me, please. They're like super crazy people.
Yeah.
But they end up kidnapping the Spectre's host. They kill the other detective.
Yeah, right in the neck.
Yeah, super insane. We get this awesome takedown scene with Batman immediately after with these burglars, which concluded with a not so great dialogue in your opinion.
Yeah. Oh god. So I love Tomasi. I know he's done a lot of great things. Everybody raves about, I believe, Superman Run, right? And Batman and Robin, I think he had a run on, which I haven't got to read, and I want to pick those up. But it's for some reason, like, Tomasi always has one line or one word in his issues that always gets me to be like, oh, man. I mean, I love him. I think he's a great writer. But, yeah, so like Clay was saying, he takes down all these villains, and out of nowhere, he's like, Alfred calls him in. There's another, like, there's basically what happened with the Spectre is going on. Alfred's telling Batman about it. Batman's all like, call in these idiots at the First National. I'm on my way. So basically calling these, you know, the criminals and stuff just idiots. And that annoys me because, one, it feels just kind of out of place for me. I've always seen Batman as somebody that doesn't, like, result to petty insults. Like, he always tells you what it is, like, or how it is. So, like, if somebody's a criminal, he says, calling these criminals, calling these people. He doesn't result to name-calling. That's more of a, like, Dick Grayson kind of thing. I feel like Dick Grayson's very the smart-assy kind of Batman, where Batman's just very serious, like, Alfred, call in, and I got X amount of people on the rooftops or whatever. So that happens a lot. And then in the other issues, which was a phenomenal arc, in my opinion, when the previous detective issues, he always calls Robin boy. And I'm just like, you're not Kratos. You are not freaking Kratos. You are Batman, Bruce Wayne, and you always call him Robin. Why are you calling him boy? And yeah, so it's just like, I don't know why, but with Tomasi, just one little word will be like, oh, it'll just get
you
to
know,
me.
Maybe Tomasi has just played a whole lot of God of War recently.
Maybe. I haven't played it, so maybe that is the truth. It's still sitting on my shelf. So.
But I'm looking at these panels right now. Dude, one thing that I do appreciate about this art more than anything is the fact that they gave Batman his, like, almost Spawn-like cape.
Yeah, love that.
And it's super long and, like, tattered. Yeah. I think that looks super cool.
Love it.
But the Spectre basically recruits Batman because he needs the world's greatest detective to find his host and the meaning behind this cult. They visit the crime scene, which nobody can see them because the Spectre, you know, doesn't allow it.
Yeah. And love that he was, like, 50 stories tall to get Batman's attention.
That was,
he was
so,
like,
cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's necessarily a callback, but in a old 90s story called Final Night, mm-hmm. He actually had taken possession of Hal Jordan and was larger than the planet Earth.
Oh, nice.
At one point.
So he's like Galactus-style?
He was like nice. In space or whatever for a short amount of time, and that was awesome. He was, like, technically Hal was possessed by Parallax and he was the host mm-hmm. of Spectre, so it was really weird.
So Spectre can just jump from people to people like Deadman? I don't know anything about the character. So
not exactly. I think he latches on more towards, like, a specific host.
Okay.
And then when that guy is dead or when his time is up or whatever, he moves on to a different host.
Okay.
I would really like to read more about him.
For sure.
I don't even know, like, where he first, you know, showed up or anything like that. But I do know that he's, like, a Golden Age character.
Yeah. Yeah, he seems it. With his costume is very basic. It's just depending on how you draw him, you can make him look really badass.
Yeah. But the Spectre ends up leaving at one point. Then everybody can see Batman. He grabs some of the evidence, and he's going to analyze it. And then we see this final shot of Corrigan in this, like, it looks like...
Kind of like,
I guess,
a seance, kind of? Like a
Yeah, it looks
kinda
like
ritual.
A seance. Yeah. But when you look in the background, there's, like, pipes and stuff, so mm-hmm. it looks like either a basement of, like, a large building or the sewers.
Yeah.
And they're basically just saying the one thing that they've been saying this entire issue, the host must die, long live the host. So very interesting that immediately after something like the Arkham Knight, we get something as dark as this.
Yeah.
So I'm down for it. I'm super down for it, especially with it being a, like, mystery, like, detective book
yeah.
inside Detective Comics.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is really cool. I'm all for that. But yeah, really solid, solid book. Love the cover art, just the regular cover art also.
Yeah, the bat signal right on his chest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
super
awesome.
Super cool.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this issue. It was different. I mean, it wasn't like, oh my god, like I had to go tell everybody about this issue, but it is different than I'm used to with Detective, you know what I mean? We know uh-huh. a lot of Tinian's run was about the family. There was a little bit of supernatural stuff going on in certain parts, but everybody's kind of focused on, like, oh, this is Batman, this is Robin. You know, I love when it gets out of element and it's just a Batman story sometimes. Because, yeah. You know, at the core, that's the character you love. Like, I love the family, too, but sometimes I just love Batman being a detective. And that's what's happening here. One of my favorite parts of this is when they got to the crime scene, and Batman was just pissed that it was a bloodbath. And he was just calling
yeah.
him out. He was like, you're a murderer. He was like, you want me to come do this, yet you murdered these people? And then, like, you know, Spectre's trying to say, like, my relationship between Corrigan or whatever is, like, pretty important. And Batman's just like, I don't care. Like... I love that. I was like, dude, you're fighting supernatural beings, and you're just like, I don't care about your reasoning. You killed these men. Like, that's all I care about. And that's, again, that's what I love about Batman. Like, he does not break his moral code no matter what. Like, if Dick Grayson killed somebody, Batman would be pissed. We saw that with Jason Todd in recent issues, you know? And, like, I just, that's the one thing I love about this man is he does not break his moral code. And it's just, it's what I find him so compelling about this character.
Yeah, you know, like, in the scene, he says, whoever did this crossed the line. Someone enjoyed doing this to another human being. And, like, as if he doesn't, like, at this point, Batman really doesn't know who did it.
Yeah.
And the inspector's just there, I found no enjoyment in having to do this, but it had to be done. And I'm, like, that's when you see the anger, really, from Bruce.
Yeah.
And, like, the art says it all here, and mm-hmm. it's super, super cool. Really enjoyed the book, like, yeah. actually, so.
Yeah, super solid. Art is great, and it's done. It did the one thing that every book should. It got me wanting to read the next issue, and that's the most important thing.
Yeah, for sure, so, for sure.
But yeah, that was also. I love the title of the next one, Cult of Personality. Come on, solid title for the next freaking thing. So, but yeah, I love that issue. Can't wait to read the next one.
Yeah, but Dial H for Hero number 4 is our next book. And I know you hadn't been reading issues 1, 2, and 3.
I've never read a Dial H for Hero, period. So, like, with, I believe this is, you know, one of Bendis's bringbacks from the past. I had never read anything previous to that either. I hadn't even heard of this before. And I was like, okay, this is some old school stuff. This should be interesting. But this was definitely the first time that I've ever read it.
Yeah, so it's really cool. When Dial H for Hero first came about, I forgot, like, exactly when. I don't know if it was 90s or 80s. But the concept of the Dial H, and you've certainly got it here, is the fact that somebody can, you know, use the phone and they turn into a random hero. But it's not any known hero here in the DC universe. It's just a random hero that is in the Heroverse inside the phone. But when the book first started coming out, there was actually a little, like, postcard in the book that said, hey, send us in your hero ideas, and we may get to use it. And they were using some of those. And in the 80s and 90s, people were like, oh, man, yeah, you know, my hero got chosen. You know, yeah. I get to say that.
Yeah.
Nowadays, they can't really do that because now right. everybody just wants money, and yeah. they're just like, hey, you use my idea. Where's my money? You know,
mm-hmm.
how many books did you sell? I got to get a portion of that, you know.
Yeah.
But, which would be freaking insane if they actually did that nowadays.
Yeah.
But this was always interesting to me. I never got to read the New 52 Dial H. I heard it's very, very good. It's been something that has been recommended to me.
Hmm.
Never got the chance to read it, but I jumped on it whenever this came out. And the only reason why I was hesitant, because I thought it was Bendis, but it's not. It's Sam Humphries. So, you know, one plus for me, for everybody who still thinks that I hate Bendis, which we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
But in this book, we have Miguel and, oh my gosh, I forgot her name. Summer?
Yes, Summer.
So Miguel and Summer find the...
Justice League Detroit?
Justice League Detroit headquarters, which makes no sense because Justice League Detroit is not in the New 52, you know, universe storyline timeline,
mm-hmm.
Which Rebirth / DC Universe is supposed to be a continuation of.
Yeah.
So that was one thing that I had to question, but, you know, I was like, you know what, just forget it. Let's just act like this is nothing and keep going. Miguel and Summer meet Snapper Carr, right?
Yeah, I think his name's Snapper, yeah.
Yeah.
Because he snaps. That's his thing. Yeah. He snaps.
it is Snapper Carr. He was the mascot /
TV sidekick. Personality?
Yeah, TV yeah. personality for the Justice League. And they felt like he was getting in the way of the whole time. So they're just like, hey, you know what? You can manage this headquarters, basically.
Yeah.
And we see that the Mr. Thunderbolt from the Thunderbolt Club, his essence, which we have been seeing from issues 1, 2, and 3, I always thought it was just like telekinetic kind of thing that he was like talking to people. But it's actually his spirit or his, like, inner being, and his body is actually in the Heroverse. And that is why he has been wanting the H-Dial so that way he can get his body back. Yeah. I thought that was very interesting. He possesses a whole bunch of these Justice League robots, which I feel like is a callback from there's a I've never read it, but there is a series pre-New 52 where most of the Justice League is out of commission, and Batman builds all of these machines, and they actually take over for like a good 4 or 5 issues.
Nice.
In a book. I can't remember if it was Batman Superman or in the actual Justice League title, but I know that has happened before. So I think this is a callback from that time. These evil robots start to attack. All three of them start to use the H-dial. We get Chimp Chang, Alien Ice Cream Man, and Miguel turns into Lil Magalito, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, so I've never read this. Also, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't there... I was very surprised to see that the H-dial was a phone. Did I see in action that it was actually a circle dial? Like, are there multiple of these things?
So, the H-dial is a circle dial phone.
Mm-hmm.
And there is supposed to be several, but okay. From what it sounds like, they have been like depleting or something like that, and mm-hmm. that's why this one is so important right now.
Okay. So yeah, so as I was reading this, one shout out to the character being a Latino. I don't see that a lot in comics, so every time I see it, whether it's a small character or a big character, I'm always for it. This seems like Miguel's the main character in this story. Mm-hmm. I haven't read the first three issues, so totally down with that. Love the, like, I guess campiness of the robots and stuff like that. I know I always bring everything back to Batman, but I am the Batman guy. But I love that this is old school Batman that builds robots. Cause like, we don't see a lot of Batman being that scientist, badass, like creator guy anymore in comics. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was always kind of cool. But yeah, this issue, it threw me for a loop, man. Like, it was just one of those comics that was just fun to read. It wasn't like I didn't give a shit about continuity or like what was happening or like, you know, I was like, oh, I can kind of question that. No, it was just a fun comic book. Like when she changes into Chimp Change or whatever, and that's just pure Sin City style, like yes. artwork. Thought that was amazing. You have Alien Ice Cream Man, which just sounds ridiculous, but I'm for it. And then you have Little Melguilito or whatever. And I thought that was just so awesome. And then they give you like these torn page, like the illustration, at least in the comic book, is like a torn page of their origins. Like, that is pretty dope.
Yeah, that has been happening since the very first issue.
Okay.
And it's something that me and Mark has definitely been pointing out, and it is always awesome.
Yeah.
I think I told you, I can't remember if it was the first issue or the second issue, but there was a play off of Goku.
Yeah.
Where instead of a monkey, he was a donkey.
Mm-hmm.
And all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
So, really, really cool. I really like the callbacks to some of the newspaper comics mm-hmm. that we see in here. That, like, Miguel is, like when he first turns into Lil Magalito,
yeah.
he is like, wait, this isn't a superhero at all. What in the yeah. world is it? And so he keeps wanting to use the H-dial.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, starts turning into all these reiterations of, like I said, newspaper comics.
Yeah.
We see at one point a Charlie Brown type character.
Yeah, for sure.
And all of that. Very, very interesting. Very funny. And, you know, eventually Miguel does dial S, which is what the Thunderbolt, Mr. Thunderbolt told him to dial.
Yeah.
And he gets his body back, and he goes inside the phone, and, you know, Snapper Carr and Summer are like, hey, we need to call the Justice League. This is something for them. And Miguel's like, no, you know, I'm the one that caused this. I need to fix it. And he jumps right into that big, you know, portal opening, and he's actually going inside the phone with the next issue being Secret Origins of the Heroverse.
Yeah. So, again, like I said, love this issue just because it was so wacky, it was so crazy. This is definitely something that I might consider picking up, like, the actual issues of, because it's so out there and so cool. Like, sometimes I love those comics. I want to point out to you, if you want to, I don't know if you have this up, if you want to go back to that origin page, because I don't know if you picked up on this. I know I'm a few years older than you, but did you see that they had a callback to freaking Mr. Toasty from Pete and Pete. I don't know if you remember that show on Nickelodeon, but Pete and Pete is something I grew up on, and the Ice Cream Man origin, that's freaking Mr. Toasty. It blew my mind when I was reading this. Mr. Tasty. Mr. Tasty is his name. Not Toasty. But it's Mr. Tasty. He's the one ice with cream the... man. Yeah, if what? You look at where it's the origin, where it's half the Sin City thing and then half of the Ice Cream Man origin,
uh-huh.
There's a page cut off, and it's an Ice Cream Man handing a popsicle in one panel. Yeah, yeah. And the very bottom one is right next to an ice cream truck where he's like, wow, that's Mr. Tasty from freaking Pete and Pete.
I did not catch that. Yeah. I know what it is. Yeah. I did not catch that on reading it. That is awesome.
My mind. And I was like, oh my God. And I literally, after finishing this issue, went to YouTube and watched clips of Pete and Pete. Because like, oh man, I haven't seen that in forever. And I absolutely fell in love with this comic because I love little Easter eggs or callbacks in comics. Whether it's a serious Batman comic or just a funny, you know, issue like this, callbacks are always great because they're always nostalgic or they're always just like, they remind you of something that you haven't seen in forever. And this blew my mind and I absolutely love this issue.
Oh yeah, you know, that was one of the first things that me and Mark caught when we were first reading this book, that it was just genuine fun.
Yeah.
It wasn't, like you said, you know, reading a Superman book and you're like, oh, I need this to be nothing but Superman. I need it to be the embodiment of Superman. I need it to be the hope of Superman.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is just a really fun story with, you know, just your run-of-the-mill characters, you know, having this H style and then having the endless possibilities of whatever hero they come up with.
Yeah.
Is really, really cool. I have, I think the first three issues, I think I bought them.
Oh, nice.
I might be able to let you borrow them.
Oh, nice.
I'll take a look.
Yeah, I'll check it out. I mean, I will definitely be going to the comic shop this week. Not on Wednesdays as much anymore, but I go during the week still. And I'll see if they have some extras. I'll probably pick it up if they're not too pricey. But they do look is this a monthly book?
Yes, this is a monthly book. Okay. So it's nothing that will tear through your wallet.
Yeah.
And I'm just also news about this book hit last week that it actually got extended in another 12 issues. It was only going to be another 6 issues. It was only going to be a 6 issue miniseries, but now it's going to be a 12 issue maxi series.
And then didn't Wonder Twins as well, right? It was two of these Wonder comics, right? That got extended. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd be down, man. This series is pretty cool. Like I said, I thought it was dope.
Yeah, very, very fun. One book that wasn't so fun for the individual character was Flash, number 73, chapter 4 of year 1. Another book that you hadn't been reading.
No.
But something that was very interesting, you know, just like any year 1 story from any other character, we got some of Barry's first experiences in this one, that being that he got shot from the first time and that he got to experience his healing factor.
Yeah.
And one thing that we saw in previous issues from this year one is literally everything that he was vibrating through was basically exploding just because of the amount of vibration. He wasn't able to control it, and they were imploding right after. So that's why he was fearful to try to take the bullet out in the first place. We see a very distraught oh my gosh, I almost said Lois Lane.
Iris
West.
Well, is she? Never mind. Yeah. She's always West.
And then, you know, that's when he takes out the bullet. You know, he's there to comfort her. He actually goes to see the turtle.
Yeah.
At Blackgate. Or, sorry, Iron Heights, not Blackgate. That's Gotham.
Yeah.
But goes to Iron Heights, sees it's Turtle, right?
Yeah, the villain is Turtle. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I always forget that name, and you see the origins of him, which is a very messed up origin.
Yeah. Yeah, super messed up.
Basically, the exact same type of accident happens to him that happened to the Flash, but it gave him the exact opposite powers. And then he realized that because of it, he is immortal. He's lived for a very long time. And because the powers are similar, he has a connection to Barry. He knows who he is. And that causes Barry to panic, tries to figure everything out before anything can go wrong. But that, you know, doesn't really go as planned, because the ending of this book, you see the turtle from the future come through with the Flash from the future, which, like you said, you hadn't been reading Flash before. Mm-hmm. We've actually seen this Flash several times. At the beginning of this year, one, but before we saw him in, like, Flash number, like, 20-something.
Okay.
When it was showing a small glimpse of the future. This is something... this design for Flash has actually been around for quite some time. And I always thought it was really cool looking for a older Flash. Mm-hmm. The only thing that that bothers me a little bit is that he has no mask. But...
Yeah.
It...
The arms kind of bother me, too. That is just like, let me show my biceps. Because I've never really taken Flash as somebody that's super muscular, you know?
Uh-huh.
He more beats you with his brain and his, you know, knowledge of his powers. I've never, like, yeah. He's not like the guy that hits the gym. So.
Yeah, for sure. But what did you think for a first time reading this book?
Yeah, so I have not... The only thing I've ever read of Flash... I want to say I did read the first few issues of the Rebirth series, because that's when Godspeed was brought up, right? So yep. I read those first, like, maybe the first, like, 6 or 7 issues, and then I stopped because I was buying every Rebirth title, and it was just too expensive. So I cut the Flash. And then, of course, I read every tie-in that has happened with Batman, and that's kind of where I'm at. So, like, this was kind of... I was like, all right, cool. Year one, anybody can jump in at this point. So I was like, all right, I'm not really lost here. I do know – I have some knowledge of the Flash. So I enjoyed this read. It was pretty cool seeing the first time he got shot, like, because I've never really seen stuff like that. I think the artwork is pretty legit too. I like it's kind of like – it's not a sketchy style, but I think it works for somebody that's constantly in super speed. You know, it just feels like it has the right vibe to it. Mm-hmm. I will say that since I've been watching the Flash show for so long, I freak out or I'm just like weirded out every time I see Iris. She's white in the comics, and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot they recast her, you know, differently in the show. And then of course the movie was supposed to be different too, so I'm surprised the comics haven't just traded it somehow.
Yeah,
because sometimes you see that. Because I think I know we're talking about DC, but Marvel has went to Black Nick Fury, right?
Yes. They have gone to, and that was more of like the Ultimate Universe, but then they collided and, you know, all that.
Yeah.
But we have started to see a little bit of that in the DC comics just recently, because there's another book that you haven't been reading, Aquaman. Has recently gotten the tattoos that Jason Momoa has.
Nice.
And he, you know, he keeps his long hair now, and even in the latest book of Aquaman, his dialogue is very Jason Momoa.
Oh, nice. Talking about saving the Earth, recycling and stuff. Yeah. Wanting to be Wolverine. Yeah.
Juice has gotten us on a kick on that at work. Yeah, you know, we've
recycle, people. Recycle. Throw away your cans. There's recycle bins everywhere.
Yeah. But moving on to what probably will be the most controversial part of the podcast. Not so much controversy between me and Juice, but controversy because I feel like everybody knows that this is coming. Action 1012, written by Brian Michael Bendis. The art is actually by, let me find that name. I think it's a, like, last page credits page, which I absolutely hate.
I'm definitely going to let you talk about this first, and then I want to give my thoughts on this of what I told you previously after I got finished reading this. So I'll let you explain it all, and then I'll give my thoughts on it, because this tripped me out after I finished this.
Like I said, written by Brian Michael Bendis, Zyman Krasinski on art, with Brad Anderson on colors, and Josh Reed on letters. So, this book is basically just filling in a whole bunch of what I feel like is just filler, to be completely honest. But we get that invisible mafia that we had seen at the beginning of this arc, you know, talking in that little lead canister.
Yeah.
And You know, they're making sure that Superman isn't paying attention to them. They are actually thinking about adding more words to the list of not to say, that being Bermuda and Triangle, because they haven't figured out is that that's where his Fortress of Solitude is. Mm-hmm. We see a back and forth with Lois and Clark, which I felt was very of the way, you know, Bendis writes Lois. I've never really liked it since the beginning of his writing. We see more of Robinson Good.
I want to point out something real quick. In the artwork for the where between Lois and Clark, did you look like Superman doesn't really have a nose? Like, he doesn't look like he has a nose in the top few panels.
There was something weird in the – is it – there's page 9, right? No. Sorry.
I'm not too sure.
I think it's – yeah, page 9.
Yeah.
You're talking about the first – 1, 2, 3, 4 panels where he like zips really fast and jokes about like, oh, I just finished. There was something very odd about that art.
Yeah.
Those panels. And I was just like, you know, try to just stay away from.
He even says in the dialogue.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, okay.
But we get more of Robinson Good. And, you know, she has a back and forth with what's her name? Trish, who is the gossip columnist at the Planet, talking about how Lois was kissing Superman, and then Robinson Good is like, huh, not her husband?
Yeah.
And you can very well see where that's going.
Yeah.
Like I don't know, like, I'm sure it's supposed to be obvious, but I just hate when things are totally obvious.
Yeah.
Where she, like, immediately is like, oh, okay, Superman is Clark Kent.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's
you think
annoying.
You think it's really going to go that way that easy?
I think that Robinson Good is making those connections, or at least saying, "Oh, Superman is kissing Superman. I'm going to let Leona know about this and see what we can do about that."
Okay,
and because a part of their list of things not to say is Lois Lane.
Oh, okay,
so. She is on their radar, but we see that Robinson Good is having a weird, like, not being able to control her powers, it seems, at one point, and she starts to cloud up a little bit, but she meets this Rose woman for an interview, which turns completely sideways, because this Rose girl is actually some sort of metahuman that has... a split personality, Thorn.
Yeah.
Who is a very aggressive, I guess, vigilante in some sort. Not the best kind of vigilante, because one of the panels we see is super bloody.
Yeah.
And she is messing all sorts of people up. But this story gets reiterated to Leon from Robinson Good. They make sure that... you know, nothing too crazy was said about their organization or any of their plans. But we find out that this Thorn woman had actually met Leviathan at the very end.
Yeah.
And that is kind of the big reveal here.
Yeah.
I personally, we all know my feelings on Bendis. I promise that I tried to move away from that. And tried to focus on some of the things that I saw were newer, like this Rose and Thorn character. Did not like the way she was written, just because I feel like he tried a little too hard on the crazy for Thorn. But that's like honestly, just that character was really all I really had to critique on this book. Okay. I felt like everything else was okay. I don't understand the big Barda joke that Trish tells Robinson Good at one point. She's like, oh, what's your name again? And she's like, Big Barda. I'm like,
what? Yeah, I kind of skimmed over that too, but I was kind of like, all right. I forgot where that happened at exactly. Blah, 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 blah. Because I remember seeing that too. I was like, okay. Yeah, what's your name again? Big Barda. Yeah, I think it's just like one of those passing things. Like, it's like, you should know who I am, so let me just throw out a stupid name.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of what happened here. So I guess my opinion on this, one, I should reiterate, Superman isn't my favorite character like it is Clay's. So I don't have that very, I guess, passionate hate towards Bendis. I was collecting Superman for a while. But this is my funny thing. This is where I kind of, I guess, was brought to the light when it came to Bendis. I was reading some random-ass comments on Instagram on a DC post. It was a Superman post. And, like, it's just so random because I usually try not to read comments because most of them are trash. I'm sorry. But somebody said, like, has anything happened in Superman? And somebody simply replied, no. And I was just like, oh, shit. Like, nothing has really happened in Superman. And I've been reading it for, like, 6-7 issues at this point. And it was just kind of weird to see that. And then, so, like, I know you say you didn't like the way Thorne was written or anything like that. When it comes to new characters that I've never seen before, I don't really know their personality, so I don't know how they're supposed to sound. So some of the dialogue, for me, I was like, you know what? I was like, people in real life talk kind of cringy at times or talk, like, in very weird ways. So I have a lot of leeway when it comes to brand new characters. But the one thing I do want to point out is, unlike Clay, I have stopped reading Superman. I stopped reading at, apparently, what did we come out that it was issue 6? 1006?
Issue 6.
So I stopped reading Superman, Action Comics is what I should say, and Superman at the same time, but it was 1006. I stopped reading this issue, and I told Clay after
six
I finished
months
this
ago.
Issue. Yeah, 6 months ago, when I finished this issue, I was like, this feels like a continuation of that exact issue. Because in that issue, we had Thorne, or no, what's the cloud chick's name?
Robinson Good.
Okay, so Robinson Good, like, fights with Superman, and it's like the talk of town in the villains. Like, oh, they went toe-to-toe together, or she went toe-to-toe
against Superman. That's at the very beginning of this book, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, so they mention it here, and then at the end of that issue is they show the car from Action, what is it, Comics number 1?
Action Comics number 1.
And you see it again in this issue. So I was like, dude, have I even missed anything? Because this seems like it's a legit continuation. This could be 1007 for all I know. Because, so it blows my mind that what happened in the last 6 months? Because this feels like it's
absolutely
just continuation.
Nothing, Juice. Nothing. Nothing has happened in this book. And one of the big things that Mark always told me, when we were first doing the podcast, when we were first reviewing these books, was that Bendis is a writer that goes for the long haul. And let me just say, I love you, Mark. I still find that to be BS. because there's storytelling like you have with Tom King.
Mm-hmm. That's a long haul.
That's a long haul. This, I can't see it being in the long haul. Because you never saw things like this. Because Bendis wants to come back to these things to be like, oh, I'm going to tell the story.
Yeah.
Just wait. I want to throw another 4 months of issues that have nothing to do with the story. But, you know, in another 3 years, I'll show the car again and we'll get back to it. So in another 3 years, it could technically be 1008.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, I'll still remind you. And then, when I finally leave to go back to Marvel, I'll never finish the story.
Yeah.
Basically.
I'll Kevin Smith it up. Yeah, so again, like I said, this doesn't bother me as much as I would say a lot of Superman fans. Probably it bothers. Although there is that rumor that Bendis might jump to Batman. So that does got me a little worried. But I will say Bendis has actually wrote one good Batman story, which was in Detective 1000. I actually enjoyed that old school Batman Penguin story. I mean, I wasn't blown away by it, but it was better than his Walmart stuff. His Walmart stuff, I could not read. It was just like, it felt like he didn't understand the character. So that has me scared. Although I low key kind of want it to happen to see if sales drop and all those people that hate Tom King are going to be like, oh man, Bendis. I'm like, you had something good. And now you're complaining? Like, no, you can't have it both ways, people. So, but yeah, again, this issue didn't really bother me. It's just, I was blown away that it felt like this was literally the next issue after I haven't read for 6 months. That's my biggest takeaway.
Yeah, and I didn't really get it all that much just because I had been reading it for 6 months. Mm-hmm. But when you like show when you told me those beats, you know, just the other day, I was just like, oh my gosh, you're right. Like literally nothing has happened. And the one thing that sucks is that this book is supposed to be more heavily connected to Leviathan.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this story right now is connected with Leviathan being at the end or whatever. But, you know, those small little, you know, seeds that he's planting with Robinson Good and, you know, the whole Lois Lane scandal. Yeah. And, you know, the invisible mafia that we see in the beginning of this, we're probably not going to see them for another, like, 6 issues.
Yeah, how long is Leviathan supposed to go on for?
Leviathan is a 6-issue miniseries. So so this is the first one that connects to Leviathan, so we're still going to get 5 more issues that possibly connect to Leviathan. So 5 more months.
I read the first like 4 or 5 pages of Leviathan and I couldn't finish it. I put it down. I was like, no. Now, the way he had Batman talking, I was like, no, I'm not going to read this book. I'm done. Like, and I mean, if you love Bendis, cool. I mean, there's definitely writers that I love that people hate. But this has been consistent in my reading of his work. It does feel like he's kind of reading one book and that's what he's basing the character off of instead of reading multiple books of multiple characters. And it kind of just, I don't know. I'm not about it. I'd rather, I mean, if he was writing stuff like Dial H for Hero, like if that was him, like I'd be all for it. But he's not writing that book. But I'm glad he brought it back because I think that's a, you know, it's an IP I have never read for or never cared for that I do now. So I'll give him props to that. I love that he's bringing back this old stuff. But, you know, when he's touching some of the characters I love that I feel like he's not actually catching their essence, that's where I get bothered by it.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So. But that is all we have for this week. You know, me and Mark haven't done this in a while, but mm-hmm. I'll go ahead and ask you. For the books that we read,
mm-hmm.
Damned, Detective, Dial H for Hero, Flash, and Action, if you had to categorize them, 1 being the best, 5 being your least favorite, how mm-hmm. would you categorize these books?
Obviously, I'm biased, so Damned's going to be number 1, just because it was a ending of a story, and the art was amazing, so I'll go... Damned 1, I'll go Heroes 2, Dial H 2, then I'll go, the next two are toss-ups, Detective and Flash, I like them equally, I mean, they're mm-hmm. fine, so I'll just say, since I'm a Batman homer, I'll go Detective 3, Flash 4, and then Superman 5. But that's just because I'm not reading Superman, I actively jumped off that book, and like I said, it seems like they haven't done anything in 6 issues, so
yeah.
That's kind of why it's at the bottom.
Yeah, so I would basically be around the same range as you, being Damned first.
Hmm.
I could very easily switch out Detective and Dial H.
Okay.
And then Flash and Action being at the bottom. Not that Flash has been bad, it's just with the other 3 books that came out this week, it did definitely push it down a little bit. But
yeah.
With that being said, Juice, where can people find you if they want to follow you or interact with you throughout the week?
So a majority of places you can find me as Juice from the Box. My YouTube channel is now Bat from the Box because I have went to a Batman-focused channel. So anything in the Batman universe, that is what I talk about on the channel. You can definitely follow me there. But on every other social media, it's definitely Juice from the Box. Twitter, Instagram, any of those other good spots, you can find me there. I'm always down to talk comics. Long as we're respectable with each other, totally down. Talking about whatever, whether we agree or disagree.
Yeah. I'm usually hanging out with Juice on his Twitch channel whenever he does stream. So make sure to follow him so that way whenever we tweet out that we're hanging out, would definitely love to hang out with you guys live and talk to you guys for sure.
Yeah.
But, of course, you can always find me at FanboyClay on Twitter. My other podcast at Fanboy Comics Pod, which I just dropped an episode out talking about the quest for Nightcrawler with Jordan Funky over at the Suicide Squadcast.
Whoa, did you have a non-Batman book on your podcast?
Oh, I know, dude. That was one of the big things that we were talking about, was that everybody was wanting to do Batman books. And I'm like, oh no, this is turning into a Batman podcast. And so I did talk to Jordan about getting a book that was somewhere other than DC. And so he chose Marvel and X-Men. So I was like, okay. And then he, you know, recommended this Nightcrawler book, which was actually really fun. Really, really cool. Nice. Really enjoyed it. That episode is up on the Comic Book Legion podcast, you know, with the title of Fanboy Comics. So go subscribe to the Comic Book Legion podcast, where you will get episodes of this show and my Fanboy Comics podcast. And then, of course, me and Mark can be contacted at the CB_Legion. And then, of course, emailed at comicbookLegionPodcast@gmail.com. All right. Oh, and Juice, I am going to ask you a favor for our outro.
Okay, what's up?
You know, I always like your outro for your show. So I think you need. I think it needs to happen.
The Bat from the Box or my OG logo, the Juice
Yeah, your Juice one.
Okay. All right, guys. So I'm going to go ahead and close out this podcast. As what we do on my channel, or if you ever come to my Twitch live stream, this is how we end the shows. But as always, I have been your host, Juice Box. Clay has been here with me. But when you wake up in the morning, ask yourself something. Have I had my daily dose of juice? See you guys next time.